And welcome once again to Otherwear, a program for the cultural creatives in our community, the visionaries, path cutters, systems busters, pioneers, bioneers, starseeds, and lightworking digital Aboriginals who want to get a handle on their hologram. And if you think this could be you, I'm here to say, unreal. Thanks for joining me. I'm Liz Miller, and it's delightful to have you along. This week on Otherwear, we're making some time for a bit of humour and to lovingly poke a bit of fun at ourselves when I get together with the brilliant stand-up comic Vanda Mikulowski. She's coming up later in the show, and she is hilarious. Currently residing in Seattle in the US, she's doing comedy about quantum physics and spirituality, which for me makes her the coolest kind of comedian there is. The concept enlightenment is fascinating to her, and Vanda's stand-up deals largely with the human predicament, inquiring into the nature of being a human being, the trap of it all, and the absurdity of it all. She offers powerful spiritual distinctions in a ridiculously funny way that leave the audience empowered, inspired, and transformed. Here's a pretty typical response from one of her fans, and this is a quote from Mark Vicenti, the director from What the Bleep Do We Know. Vanda's show made for a raucous and outrageous evening of irreverence about the things people usually revere, things of the spiritual realm. Vanda is playful where others are pious and grab-your-gut funny where others are significant. Her characterizations and observations about the human dilemma are acute and insightful. Vanda is where streetwise meets wise. It's a sorely needed voice in a world that takes itself a tad too seriously. I wholeheartedly agree. It's going to be a very fun show, and we definitely need more people like Vanda out there, in my opinion, so I do hope that you stay tuned for the next couple of hours. Hope you enjoyed hearing the interview with David Sarita last week while I was away. For those of you who do not know, I took last week off as a dear friend, Jessie, passed away from leukemia on Friday, and I wasn't really up for doing the show. But I must say that since his passing, all of Jessie's friends have been a complete inspiration to me in the week that has ensued. He got a beautiful send-off at his funeral and wake, and with the way that everyone has rallied together to support one another since Jessie passed away, has just been amazing to see. Jessie was quite special. He was very young, only 24, gay, and a classical ballet dancer. But most of us who knew him met him on the dance floor in nightclubs. So his funeral was organised by all his friends, and I tell you what, they made sure that the music and production were amazing. And at the wake, we all danced together in Jesse's honour one last time to some amazing disco records and clapped and cheered him to the heavens. And I think all of us felt his spirit flying around just before he was ready to head off home. It was one of the most uplifting and wonderful experiences I've ever had. And I've always known that funerals could be celebrations of people's lives, but until this one, I hadn't been to any that were like that. But it really gave me hope for a good time at mine. And Jesse had a wicked sense of humour too, so I'm dedicating this show to him, and I hope he gets to hear this sometime, as I just know he would adore Vanda. I've also got some lovely new promos from King Street Records, fresh in this week, and a new release by Kerry Chandler that's not out until next month, so you're hearing it way before it hits the shelves. So let's have a listen to it now, suitably entitled I Think of You. It's one of those signature tracks of Kerry's with a fat, deep bass line and subtle grooves that I just love, underpinning a pretty nice male vocal that I've come to really like. It might take a couple of listens to really grow on you, but once it does, I tell you, it is fabulous. And this is the Love Sick Mix. It's out on Grey Matter, that's G-R-E-I, a subdivision of Digital Soul Inc. out of New York City. Sanders' Quantum Comedy Show is up next when Otherwhere returns. This week on Otherwhere is none other than spiritual comedian Vanda Mikulovsky. She brings her own unique brand of comedy with her wherever she goes, and lately she's been going to some pretty good places. She's been opening up for the What the Bleep sequel down the rabbit hole all over the US as it premiered in major cities. And she's been scoring some pretty amazing gigs at New Age conferences, festivals and the like. So it's pretty great to know that there are people out there like Vanda
as a spiritual quantum comic, as she has become known. She presents at conferences, metaphysical centres and New Thought churches, and Vanda riffs passionately about enlightenment, quantum physics, the nature of and pitfalls of being a human being, personal growth, spirituality, metaphysics, yoga, meditation, peace, and even love. So without any further ado, Vanda Mikulovsky, welcome to Otherwhere. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Liz. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I just love what you do. And as soon as I saw the short film that people can watch if they go to your website or if they go to YouTube and look you up, they can find a pretty short, snazzy film that's a promo for your work. And honestly, it was, you know, just a couple of minutes into it and I knew that you were someone really special. So let's talk about what you do and how on earth you ended up becoming what's called a spiritual comedian, or, you know, having a show that's called a quantum comedy show.
Yeah, well, you know, I've never been comfortable with the title spiritual comedian. It's just like, it's like the closest I can get to describing what I do. It's really, you know, because, you know why? Because spiritual creates a duality immediately. There's me, the spiritual comedian, and then the other non-spiritual comedians, you know. And it's like, so it's like, but it's like as close as I can get to give it people a sense, you know. It's not going to be your normal fare that you, when you go to a comedy club and what you see there, you know, it's different than that. Although I got my chops in the comedy clubs in New York City, you know, I came up in the 80s doing comedy, kind of just talking a lot about guys and about relationships and about partying and, you know, just the stuff that I was concerned about back then, what a pain my mother was and stuff like that. That was my major topics. And I did quite well with it. I got on TV, national television and everything, but I kind of became disenchanted with it after a while. My spiritual journey took me out to Seattle, and I decided I was going to kind of go into a cave and become a yoga teacher for 10 years. And it didn't hurt that I needed to get myself clean from drugs and alcohol. That kind of added to the whole thing, too. So I went to rehab, and I handled those issues. And now I'm back. And I've been doing this for a year, but it's been flying.
Wow, so it's only been a year since you've taken it up again. That's wild.
A little over a year. August of last year is when I had written my first show, starting in June, July, and then I finally put it up in August. And so it's closer to a year and a half.
Well, that that speaks volumes, doesn't it, about how needed your work is in the community.
You know, it's really been welcomed. It's really been welcomed.
Yeah. One of the things that you do is you're quite irreverent about things that people usually revere. Things of the spiritual realm. But, you know, people can get very, very dogmatic about it and get quite touchy about people poking fun at things that they consider sacred. What's your take on all of that?
You know, it's like I eschewed religion a long time ago, and we're like, you know, what is that but a group of people together, like kind of believing the same thing and agreeing with each other? And there's so many different systems of thought. My latest thing now is, why do we need beliefs? Why do we even need them? Can't we just show up? You know, kids just show up. But the question is it necessary? Do we really have to hold certain things absolutely sacred? There's that paradox that exists where, like Gilda Radner, some of your listeners who are old enough will remember from Saturday Night Live, great comedian. She said, a true comedian holds nothing sacred. You can see the humor in all of it. And yet the paradoxical thing is that means everything's sacred. Nothing and everything at the same time would be sacred, you know? So, yeah, whatever you can't laugh at owns you.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
And it's so important to remind people of that, I think. When when people come to your show, do you have a lot of people coming up to you afterwards or getting in touch with you later and saying, you know what, I was really stuck. But when I saw what you had to say, something just shifted in me and now I'm looking at things a little bit more differently. Does that happen much?
Yes. And not so much exactly like that, but they kind of just go, wow, you are, you know, you don't hold back, you know. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I'm 47 now. I paid some dues and I don't have to. I don't care, as you know, about the things I cared about before as much, you know. So it's nice to, and I've done a lot of personal work, you know, like, and apparently not enough personal work because my little sister's not talking to me right now. But oh. I've done a lot because I was self-righteous, right? I was making her wrong about something. And now she hung, you know, we'll get back together. But, yeah, always something right there in your past, right, to grapple with. Everything's a gift.
Oh, yeah. And one of the funniest lines that's actually in that promo of yours is a crack that you make about Ram Dass and about spending time with your family. Do you want to share that with the audience?
Oh, yeah. Ram Dass, the Jewish metaphysical writer, he's great. He's so touching and great and does the greatest hospice work and stuff. He says his take on enlightenment. He goes, if you think you're enlightened, try visiting your family for a week.
And I bet, you know, there are people out there who know exactly what he means.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, people, there's like the phony holy people. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you get along with your mother? You know, you got to, if you're cool with your mother, if she no longer triggers you, or your father, he no longer triggers you, then you're cool. You know what I mean? Where the rubber hits the road, you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's the acid test of enlightenment, I think, is to be able to really, you know, all the people who you love the most, to be able to not, to let them be exactly as they are and exactly as they aren't, you know. The thing is I didn't know that I was doing it while I was doing it. Like, you think you're doing the best for her, you know. And then I asked a friend, he said, were you making her wrong? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, this is how you know if you're making someone wrong. Either you're completely at peace with them exactly as they are and exactly how they're expressing, or you're making them wrong.
Yeah.
Light bulbs went off for me. You know?
Yeah. And when it comes to putting together, you know, little bits and pieces for the show, you're obviously drawing on your life experience, and one of the best things I think about your comedy is that it's observational and that it's really very much drawing from your own life experiences, and through that you let yourself be a bit vulnerable, because sometimes you tell people stuff that's, you know, personal or stuff that you wouldn't normally tell a group of people. But you do it because it'll help shed some light on something and then generate a laugh. How do you go about getting into a space where you can write material for the show? Do you find yourself having to write notes during the day? Do you take a little notebook around with you or a dictaphone? Or do you set time aside to work on stuff and kind of just, I don't know, go through what's happened this week and who have I met that's really made me laugh? Or, you know, what's the process there?
You know, I have, gosh, it's really chaotic. I have not, I mean, I just sit and, you know what I do the most? I invite someone over to work with me,
right.
A friend.
Yeah.
Sometimes I pay them, sometimes I don't. Sometimes they're more than willing to just do it for fun, you know. And the fact that they're coming over at a certain hour makes me have to sit down and do it. But it's not my favorite part of the thing. I like when ideas come to me fully formed already. Sometimes they do that. You know, sometimes you have to sit down and really groom them, you know, and find, oh, there's, am I saying enough? Am I saying too little? You know, that the art of stand-up, the craft of stand-up is, it's precise, it's efficient. You know, in order, the idea really is that you're delivering a concept that you want it to land at an exact moment where everybody can get it at once.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a Yeah, there's an art to it that's really kind of fascinating. So I really love working out in front of crowds. And oftentimes I take ungroomed material on stage with me and just throw it out there and see how it feels.
So, hecklers. Now, you must have obviously in the beginning of your career had a lot of people heckle you because it just is standard with stand-up comedy. But nowadays, does that just not happen anymore because of the kind of crowd that you're, you know, sort of performing to?
Oh, no, it still happens.
Really?
And as long as human beings need attention, it will continue to happen. You know, and I think we all need attention at some point or other, right? So, but yeah, no, it does happen.
Okay, are the heckles different? You know, are they nicer now or something?
I have a joke. I say I work in some spiritual communities where instead of heckling me, they actually just take out sage and smudge my negative energy. But no, they try. They actually. I have people. Oh, I know, because one of my jokes starts out, I'm a yoga teacher, and then it says I'm not a good yoga teacher, and people interrupt the joke with, yes, you are. And I'm like, thanks for messing up my joke right there. And I thank you for the acknowledgement. Let me start that whole joke right over again and just shut up this time. Okay? Okay. So you don't even have to say much of anything dealing with the heckler. You just have to acknowledge it. Like, you know, all you have to do really sometimes to get a laugh is go, uh-huh, and then continue.
Yeah.
You know. Or I say, feel free to yell out incoherent bull crap while during my show, okay? Go ahead. What did you say? You know, oftentimes if you give them a rope, they'll hang themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you found that you've been able to just sort of channel comedy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all related to who you're being. Like, if you go in there with a certain intention, then everything's going to come out of your mouth right.
Mm.
Because it's all in the context of that great intention. That's the best intentions are normally not about me. And, you know, they're normally about the audience.
Yeah.
And what I intend for them, or the yoga students, right? If you go in there being someone who's a contribution, then it's like, wow, my intention is that I'd like to actually have this be something that makes a difference for others.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, that was probably my next question. What is your motivation? And it seems really obvious that your intentions are to shed light on a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
What are the motivations behind your work?
Well, here's all I got to work with is the stuff of my life, like you were saying before. So a friend of mine calls it farming for stuff in your life.
Yeah.
You know, so you access your own humanity where you're a jerk, and it gives other people access to theirs and permission to be human.
Mm.
You know, so but in the comedy, so I those are the juicy parts that I bring on stage, and even I keep, you know, reading and getting distinctions that empower me, and I offer them on stage, you know, or just keep expanding new. Here's one that was really great. We don't relate to our view of life. Human beings, I find we don't relate to our view of life like it's a view. We relate to our view of life like it's the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I do that thing about the dog, you know, I have the thing they give your dog when he's been neutered, right, the big cone. We're like that in reality, you know. It can't lick our sore genital area, but and that's all we want to do. But you know, like, ideas like that are mind-expanding. Like, huh, I never thought of that. I guess I do relate to my view of life like it's the truth. I guess there is more than my little angle on reality. You know, so anything that kind of where I've had an aha moment, I definitely write that down and think, oh, I got to write a joke about this concept.
Yeah.
You know.
So can I ask you just quickly before we go on, have you got so far, has there been one ultimate favorite line that you've been able to hit people with during your shows that you just
think... Oh, I have so many.
Like, at the time when you thought of it, you just laughed and laughed and laughed and couldn't
stop. Oh, I know. Yeah, I had one. I actually wrote it in the shower. It came to me perfectly formed, and it was because my sister's child was 13, Mari. She sent me a survey to help, because I'm single, right, and I'm 47, and everyone wants me to not be single, and myself included, actually, and she said, what do you want in a man, and it was a survey that had things like, does he have scars or not, you know, and I'm like, well, as long as they're not self-inflicted, I think, I guess it'll be okay, you know, and then she says, is he rich or poor, and I said, well, I'm no gold digger, but let's just say his idea of a retirement plan can't be an affirmation card across from his toilet that says, I'm abundant. Yeah, I loved it. When it came to me, I went, that is so funny. And everyone's going to, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt some people. You know it's going to hurt, but it's, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, what would be your ideal gig if you could possibly have, you know, any audience, any venue? Have you thought about what it would be?
Yeah, because I was just rewatching Jerry Seinfeld's movie Comedian, mm-hmm. and Bob, Bill Cosby was talking about his ideal gig, and I said, yes, it's like a 2,700 seat venue where I, you know, I'm walking out and loving on those people, and they're loving on me, and we just rock the house together. You know, it's like that kind of a venue, and it's the kind of thing where it's like healing. Like you asked me about my intention, like we really, really joyfully connect. You know, in that people actually heal something. I mean, I want people to grow limbs back. I want to have a miracle. I first of all, it would look great on my website as a blurb, right? But also, I just think, you know, we say laughter heals, and I know a cascade of great chemicals courses through your body, but like I want real evidence. You know, I want someone to heal something. I think that would be cool.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm sure that as soon as you are playing venues of 2,700 people, there will be miracles.
Yeah.
And there will be healings, because laughter is one of the most healing tools that we have to work with to bring us perfect health. I just love the cascade that occurs within the physiology of a person from the brain down when you laugh. And, you know, this leads perfectly into your understandings about quantum physics and the anatomy, you know, the movie What the Bleep focused really, really beautifully on that subject, and Candace Pert's interview and her research on peptides and how we can be addicted to our emotional states because we're basically addicted to generating certain chemicals in our brains every day because we live in a certain way of being. When we're living in humour and laughter most of the time, we're actually able to change the chemicals that our brain makes. And
Yeah, you can't laugh for an hour straight without it really making a difference on some level, you know. You just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty magical what happens physiologically, you know. And like I tell my yoga classes, if we really wanted to be look in a big enough microscope and see ourselves, we're mostly empty space, you know. And what with little bits of fluctuations of energy, kind of poking in and out of reality, you know, and sometimes it's a wave and sometimes it's a particle, depending on who's observing it, you know, and it's like pretty magical matter if you look at it. And I love that, that it's informed by, according to Harvard educated endocrinologist Deepak Chopra and my boyfriend, I'm kidding, he's not, but it's your thoughts that inform all of it. You know, it's your people say, well, what about my genetics? Part of why I'm ill is my genetics. And I'm like, yeah, it's your parents' thoughts too. You know, we've got to overcome all of that.
Oh, look, you know, as we lead up to 2012, and actually that sparks me off, have you got any material about 2012?
No, in fact, I'm not sure I even know what's exactly happening. Is that the end of the earth?
No, not at all.
Is that the light workers are going to reconvene? Or I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound, but I've just there's only so much I can stay on top of. Now, what is 2012?
There are many prophecies that center around that time.
The Mayan calendar.
The biggest one centers around the Mayan calendar, and it doesn't end in 2012. It just gets to the end of a particular cycle in the Mayan calendar, a 13,000-year cycle. And what's happening is that there are other cycles that are also closing or finishing off at that time of 2012. There's a 2,000-year Piscean cycle that we've just come out of as we're moving into Aquarius. That's finishing. There's that 13,000-year cycle. There's something like five different cosmic cycles, all synchronized to complete December 21st, 2012. it's pretty cosmic. So what will happen after that? No one really knows. A lot of people believe that we'll enter a new era, a new age, which is where the whole expression new age comes from, and that we may even move on to a path beyond physical form, beyond technology, that a mass awakening and transformation may occur on the planet that's sparked off by our alignment with the galactic center, because at that time we are actually going to be directly in line with the nuclear bulge of the galactic center, which the Mayans considered the cosmic womb where all of us came from. We all originated from there. And that's where we all go back to. So there's a pulse or something that'll hit us on Earth, because it'll be beaming straight to us. So it's a pretty interesting time to be alive. And I wonder, have you thought about why, you know, you might be around at this time? Have you thought that it wasn't a coincidence at all that you were born to be alive at this point in time?
Any of us are here, I think, at any time, but it's perfect. It's all very perfect, you know, and that's one way to look at it.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything is the truth, because you know, it's just inconsequential, really. You know, to grab onto something and say it's the truth. So I think, but my opinion about it, where I lean toward, is that 6 years from now, there is an emerging new consciousness on the planet, and there may be some external factors that will facilitate it, and will have tendencies to be more allowing and to actually let to do the real work that it takes to conquer the egoic mind and stuff like that. Perhaps there will be some tendencies to do that in a hundredth monkey kind of effect, where if enough people do it, like I know I've done a lot of personal work and really take myself on quite rigorously. And it impacts everybody around me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have my life isn't sloppy. You know what I mean? It's like kind of intentional. So I have a girlfriend who says, I'm codependent. I keep attracting alcoholics. I say, knock it off. You know what I mean? Knock it off, honey. Stop it. Stop it. Let's do that. You know what I mean? Like, you got to look. You got to look and see, where are you addicted?
Yeah.
If you're attracting addicts.
Yeah.
Where are you checking out rather than checking in? Mm. You know, so I don't know. There may be some external factors. I'm vigorously looking at the internal ones, and there's always more there. I'm not cooked yet. You know what I mean? Like, I call myself I'd say enlightened comedy, but it's only as enlightened as I, you know what I mean? Like, how enlightened can it be when my little sister isn't talking to me? So, but what I can say is that I'm more responsible for that. I've called her up and apologized 3 times and offered my hand, you know. Why did I say that? Oh, 2012. Because, you know, we tend to give our power away to external things.
Right.
Like, or the runes, or the tarot cards, or the this, or the that, or my navel lint.
Mm-hmm.
All of it's a microcosm of the macrocosm, or a macrocosm of the microcosm. You know, but mine, the human condition, and the degree of cynicism or resignation in your next-door neighbor, or in you, rather than the degree of possibility.
Yeah.
You know, of where you... who are you being in the world? You know, that's what I ask, rather than what's happening in terms of my sun sign. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Now, I think that those things have some relevance, because nature has relevance. But we're here to make known the unknown, and I think we could do something that's beyond what the Mayans ever even thought of. You know what I mean? Like, that could actually be exponentially greater than anything we could imagine.
Well, you know what? I kind of have the feeling that that's the reason why there is no Mayan calendar post-2012, not in the strict official sense that we have right now. It's not that they didn't think that time would cease, or that the world would cease to be. I truly believe that they left it blank so that we could write it. And because we are in a new world, and you're part of that new world, I'm part of that new world. Mm. We're working with a new set of frequencies, a new energy that really hasn't been on the planet before, as far as I feel, anyway. You know, who knows if I'm right. But I truly feel as though we are making breakthroughs in our consciousness, and in the way that we're starting to look outside of ourselves and not just be so focused on the me, and start to realize that we're we, you know, and that there is no separation between out there and what's going on in here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the basic tenets of quantum physics, isn't it?
Unified field. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I saw a great bumper sticker. I want you, your Australian friends, to know that I saw a great bumper sticker in America that said, "I love my country. I just think it's time we start seeing other people."
That's fantastic.
Isn't that good? I wish I had written it, but it was
so
a bummer. Yeah. And it just says it, doesn't it? Because it really is that. And, you know, here's the thing, though, Liz, that I was listening to a radio show about racism, and I called in. I was actually motivated to call in because everyone was talking about how it exists out there in other people. And I'm like, how come no one ever approaches the question in themselves? Are we racist? Because I really think if you say you aren't, that you're lying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think everybody has their point of view about other people. If you're not racist about the color of someone's skin, you're racist about someone's or ageist or something.
Yeah.
You know, relating to another human being as other than one with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I do it all the time, and I'm a yoga teacher. I'm supposed to be holy. But, you know, I mean, there's the rich vein to mine is look in yourself and see, oh, my gosh, am I ageist or sexist or racist? Or where do I look at another human being and not have them come up, I don't even relate to it as equal. Equal implies a hierarchy. I'm saying one.
Mm, yeah.
You know, beyond equal, we're one.
Yeah, I have a favorite saying that there's only one of us here. And,
I love it.
And it's true. You know, it's really true. When you start coming at life from that angle, everything does change, and you start to you start to realize that if you want healing to occur out there, if you want peace in the world, if you want people to smile at each other during the day when they're walking down the street, you know, all that stuff, you've got to be able to just look inside and say, where am I not smiling at people in the street? Where am I not being peaceful in my own life? And once you find yourself healing those aspects of yourself, everything around you does transform and change.
Yeah.
I mean, with your comedy, you're seeing a new kind of vibrancy around your work because people really need it and people really want it and they can see so much value in it. And I think that that's because of work that you must have done internally on yourself.
Yep.
So can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm vigorous with my, like, I don't rely on just me. For a while, I was into the paradigm of sitting in a cave and meditating, right? And that was good enough, being with my my universe, my God, my reality. And then I expanded to include other human beings. So I actually have friends who keep who kind of hold me to a high bar for myself.
That's great.
Yeah, they're really great folks who, if I show up less than what I, like my girlfriend Tony. Okay, I'll tell you a really revealing story. My girlfriend Tony, she's great. She's not. She was refreshing because she wasn't like a lot of the New Agers that I knew. I said, are you going to go the celibate route when I first met her? Are you going to do the celibate thing? And she goes, look, I didn't have sex the first 15 years of my life, and I probably won't have sex the last 15. In between, there's going to be some screwing, okay? And I went, oh, my God, I love her. She's great. She's funny. You know, so, and she's, okay, so I was waitressing a few years ago, and I, you know when you drop a spoon on the ground, you don't put it back on the table, right? You put it in your pocket so no one sees it, and then you put it back on the table when no one's looking. Okay, everybody does that. Okay, so I ended up with some really nice cutlery at my house, you know, and I'm like, look at all these spoons. And then pretty soon, I had like a full set of silverware here at my house that actually belonged to the hotel that I worked for. And I decided, they gave me a turkey, and I was a part-time worker. And I was, like, walking out with this big old turkey. What a generous gift from the big corporation, right? Mm-hmm. And my spoon, another spoon I had stolen, right? And I'm walking with my turkey and my spoon going, oh, this doesn't feel right. Oh, my God. So I call up my friend and I say, hey, I'm going to go return all this stuff that I took, all this silverware. And she said, oh, well, you can't just return it. You have to talk to your manager. I go, what do you mean? She goes, if there's no confrontation, there's no growth.
Right. Yeah.
And I went, and I knew in that moment I had to. So I talked to Emily, who was like 30 years old, like a, you know, to me, a younger girl, someone I would encourage along in her little hotel career. You go, girl, you know. And and I said, you know, I feel like such a jerk. But I said, honey, I got to tell you something. And I understand if you fire me, but I stole some silverware and I had it at my house. I'm returning it. And I promise if you don't fire me that I will never do it again. You know, and she was like, her jaw dropped. She couldn't believe I was being that honest with her. And she said, almost all the employees probably have a full set at home, you know. And I said, yeah, but I told my friend Tony that I would tell you about it. She didn't fire me. She said, don't tell anybody else about it, though. But it was just like a really great way to take responsibility for the fact that I'm a thief.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a liar and a whore and a cheat, too. And like a lot of those things. This drives New Agers crazy when I say it. But that's where I get my power as a stand-up comic.
Well, yeah. And the fact is that you allow yourself to be vulnerable in front of your audience in order to go through the growth that comes with that vulnerability and being able to let yourself do that. People love it. people wish, I guess, that they could do that more often in their own lives, and that's something that you bring to them.
Yeah. Yeah. it's really fun. And it was scary. It was scary to do. It wasn't the path of least resistance. Yeah. You know, by default, I go to where most human beings go, to pleasure and comfort, you know.
Yeah.
But like I was telling you, I got these great friends who keep me on my, hold me kind of to my word, you know. I'm committed to making a big difference through the fodder of my own humanity. Yes, and who you're being is a light, you know, you are that. And I will give myself to keeping you light, you know what I mean? It's a delight for me to be your friend and to talk to you and be doing the same kind of work across the world from each other.
I know, it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that I was teaching yoga for a long time, maybe 7 or 8 years before I got to a point of being a little bit burnt out. I think most yoga teachers get to that point when they've taught more than 4 classes a week for any length of time and not done enough classes for themselves.
Yes.
That's a trap that a lot of yoga teachers get into. And I had to walk away from it for a number of years and focus on DJing. But in the last, I guess, 3-4 years, yoga has definitely been that thing that I knew I would come back to, and I have come back to it. But in the middle of all of this time, you know, it was like I went from a very light-filled state of being where all of the contacts I was having were around the yoga community or just around people who were a bit more conscious than the mainstream. And then I went into this whole field of real darkness. And
right, another thing we have in common is that we've spent a lot of time with the underbelly of society, you and I. Yes,
and
all right.
It's an amazing thing to go through because what you get out of it is so powerful, and then it allows you to go on into doing new things like me with this radio show, you with the kind of stand-up comedy that you're doing, and break new ground and really draw from the experience of having seen both ends of the spectrum, if you know what I mean, to get to a point, hopefully, of a bit more balance. And I'm not saying that I'm 100% enlightened or balanced or any of that, but I know,
you know,
I'm on a direction that will take me there.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's something that you feel as well with your work.
Yes. And you know, I want to say something for the listeners that have this is something that gave me a lot of power when a friend said, it was at a seminar I took where someone said, I want the negative self-talk to stop. I want the undermining, self-sabotaging voices in my head to go away. And then the guy in the course went through all the people in the course. There was a guy there in his 80s, and he went through every decade and goes, have the voices stopped? And I think we might find that they get a little quieter, but they're always going to be there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then at my age, which is something I think they should tell every kid in school, you do have a choice, and it doesn't appear like you have a choice. I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm worthless, you know, all those things. You do have a choice when that comes up. I'm a slob, I'm a nana, a loser, la, 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 all that stuff, you know, and it just doesn't occur like you have a choice. It occurs like it's the truth.
Well, speaking of Candace Pert earlier, you know, a lot of that has to do with repetitive programming. And when you're telling yourself, I'm ugly, I'm worthless, you know, I'll never have this, or I'm not good enough, constantly, and, you know, maybe others in your life are reiterating that to you because that's what you believe about yourself, then your brain's kicking in as well, and you're getting addicted to the peptides that your brain is creating, and so it makes it so much harder to make that choice in that moment because there's not just the mental processes, there's physical processes, there's emotional, there's spiritual things going on in, you know, at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can, it's a very empowering thing. Have you found yourself being able to pick yourself up on good programming?
Yeah, I'm rigorous too. I call friends quite often, and I'm blessed. I have friends who say, you know, that they get their life when I flourish. That their life is all about me flourishing. And
wow.
I don't mean just me. I mean that's what they love.
Yeah.
That's who they are, is someone around whom other people flourish.
Mm.
And that's what I've constituted myself as, someone around whom other people flourish. Sometimes I'm not so hot at it, like my little sister I told you isn't talking to me. But that's, you know, a friend of mine said, you're nothing. You're not worthy. You're not unworthy. You're nothing. You're spaciousness. You're nothing. Like, once you really get that, mm-hmm. then you can create anything,
yeah.
anything you take a stand for. You know, so I said, well, in the light of an empty canvas, then I'm, let's say I'm someone around whom everybody flourishes. Oh, I like that. That lights me up. You know, oh, I'll try that. You know, so, and then I got those people around me who are the same way, you know. But it's work and inquiry into your own thought system. Have you seen the Byron Katie stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like she's rocking. She speaks right to me because she has this elegant way of just having people, where people get jammed up in their lives, and just having them look and see if it isn't a way they think that has them jammed up, you know? And
it's always like, isn't it?
Yeah, we're like lighthouses. We can shine on everything out there, and then we can't shine on ourselves. But when we do, when we really do, and she's such a gracious and gentle company, you know, like a friend to walk you through your mind, the bad neighborhood of your mind, right? Don't go in there alone. No, she's the one. Byron Katie, her website is thework.com. And anywhere where you're suffering, anywhere where you're jammed up, she's just great. She's just great. She's given me so much freedom. I swear, I read her first book, Loving What Is, and I had an altered state of awareness. I was walking around. My brother knew it, too, because he came over. He's like, what happened to you? I was like, everything's perfect. It's all perfect.
Well, that's so good. And I think you should tell Byron Katie.
I did. You know, it's so funny. I did. I have a little snippet at the end of my comedy thing. That's online at my website, vanda. No, I'm kidding. It's vanda.us and www.vanda.us. So anyway, there's a video clip where I mentioned Byron Katie at the end, and someone told her husband, and he looked at it and he liked it, and he said, why don't we use you on Byron Katie's blog? She has a blog, which is byronkatie.com. And her name is Byron. It's a male name, but I don't know. It's just her name. So, and I said, well, yeah, I'd love to. So she's going to do a little introduction about humor, and then they're going to use my little piece one of these days soon.
Oh,
so you
that
can...
is just brilliant.
Yeah.
Actually, we need to take a little break. So before we do that, I'd like to ask you about one of your favorite quotes, because you do quote a lot during your show, and you have got some fantastic quotes. That one from Byron Katie that you've just mentioned is a fantastic quote. Could you tell the audience about that one?
Well, there's a few, but my God is reality. I'm a lover of what is.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's, and then she always also talks about there's three kinds of business. There's God's business, there's your business, and there's other people's business. And, you know, she encourages people to stick with their own business,
mm-hmm.
you know? And at one point, I think I even heard her say once, at some point, really, there's only other people's business and your business, that's aligned with your business and God's business is like the same business.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And we're speaking with the wonderful Vanda Michalowski. You can find her online, as we mentioned earlier, at www.vanda.us. And in the words of Bill Maher, he's quoted as saying, Vanda is superbly smart and funny. Funny and smart, both of those. And she certainly is. I want to ask you about Bill Maher when we come back, as well as some of the other people in the comedy world who've been an influence on your life and on your material and your style. So when we come back, we'll be joined once again by Vanda Michalowski. This is Otherwhere. You're listening to BBS Radio. I'm Liz Miller, and we'll be back real soon.
Hi, this is Mark Macy, author of Spirit Faces, Truth About the Afterlife, and you're listening to Liz Miller on Otherwhere.
Dennis Ferrer, you've been listening to Transitions, a brand new release stemming from his forthcoming full-length album entitled The World As I See It. And already it's been championed by monster DJs Louis Vega, Danny Cribbett and Joe Clasell, and this stunner once again showcases Dennis's diversity and distinct ability to go from uplifting spiritual pandemonium to pretty hot underground, deep, danceable, head-nodding tech house, which is what you've had a sample of just then. This one sounds a little bit more like a Night Grooves record rather than a King Street release. Yes, nevertheless, it is another work of electronic art from Dennis, with its profound, repetitive synthy bassline we all like so much, with Latin claps and Afro-styled percussion. It's just so good. Hope you're enjoying the interview with Vanda Michalowski, renowned stand-up comic and speaker. If you'd like to know more about any of the guests that I have on the show, then please check out the links at the Otherwhere bio page at bbsradio.com. Or for past guests, you'll find all those links at my blog, Confessions of a Noospheric Chip, at otherwhere.blogspot.com. There's also a Yahoo group that you may join at no cost at yahoogroups.com. Just do a search for Otherwhere and sign up. And I'd also like to take a moment to thank Nona Stewart for being the first listener to donate to the show via the PayPal button on my page. She's also the only listener, but that makes her even more special. A couple of weeks back, I let you all know that the future of this program on BBS Radio is a little unclear. And I would like to let you know that I definitely want to remain here, of course, but simply can't handle the extra costs on my own. So if you really want this show to survive, any help you can provide will go towards keeping the show on the air. I truly appreciate your help and want to say thanks so much for the incredible support and encouragement all the listeners who've been in touch have shown me. Now, let's get back to the show.
Downloading. Otherwhere.
You're listening to bbsradio.com. This is Otherwhere. My name's Liz Miller, and if you've just tuned in, we're joined by one of the funniest women on the planet, according to Sam Kinison. The late Sam Kinison, a wonderful comic from a few years ago, who said that Vanda is the funniest woman I've ever met. She's with us right now, and Vanda, let's talk some more about your influences in the comedy world. You started off doing comedy when you were quite young. How old were you?
I was about 22. It was New York. This was before anyone knew that you could die from sex or from drugs. You know, like coke and sex was everywhere. And the 80s, big hair. Some people died from big hair, I think, I don't know. But it was a brilliant time in New York, and I was with these funny, funny people. And I had a great job doing voiceover work, so I didn't really need to work that much. So it was just this heyday for me in New York City, and I was an MC at Catch a Rising Star, which was one of the major clubs in New York, and hung out with all these really smart, really funny guys, and basically really wanted to just impress them and be a comics comic, and that's where I started. And kind of ambitious.
Well, 22 is pretty young to be getting up on stage and trying to make people laugh. It's a very brave thing to do at 22, I have to say. You just come out of your adolescence and things are all awkward and you're not sure about who you are. And to actually get up there and try and crack jokes, I really applaud anyone who does it, let alone a 22-year-old. So
I totally didn't think I had what it took either. I was like, I want to do it once before I die. Mm-hmm. I'm not smart enough and I'm not funny enough. Mm-hmm. Those two things. I didn't think I was either one because they seemed brilliant. I watched them for about a year before. I took a little workshop with six other comics, and we got a nice little community together that encouraged each other to go out to the open mics. And the first time I did it was like, I just want to do it once before I die, you know, like skydiving or something.
Yeah.
And that I was still alive after was kind of like, oh my God, I'm alive. It was okay, you know. And I then, you know, my brother, when I was in college before I got into stand up, he said, "Why are you in college? You're flunking out." And I'm like, "'Cause I don't want to be here." And he said, "Well, why are you there?" And he said, "Well, Mom wants me to be here." And my brother said one of those pivotal things, you know, that people say. He said, "Never do something, never live your life for someone else." And that, just that one thing, gave me permission to go to New York and pursue a career in show business.
Mm, how wonderful.
Yeah.
And who
yeah.
are the comedian or the comic influences or idols for you at that time?
Yeah, I loved the most edgy, irreverent guys. You know, when Sam Kinison came on the scene in New York, we had heard about him from L.A., the screamer guy, you know, and he was every bit as iconoclastic, to use a big, big word, breaking down icons, you know, just even just doing things that were so just like politically incorrect. You know, I loved it. I loved it. And then Bill Maher and I became a couple for a little while, and we were, he really helped me raise the standard, because the pitfalls for a woman in comedy is they act like they act like a woman on stage where they do womany stuff, where it's like, am I right, girls? Aren't men this way or that way?
Yeah.
And it becomes kind of polarized. Rather than where Bill encouraged me to go was to you're a comic. Talk about your life.
Mm.
You know, and it's like there is also the female experience, but that's not who I am.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's part of who I am.
What great advice.
Yeah. Yeah. What's so I didn't have to. I didn't have to make a lot of the mistakes females make doing, you know, Tampax humor.
Mm-hmm.
He just said, no, none of that, none of this.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things that I really picked up on your material that I loved. You weren't doing that. And it's so typical for female comics to just go there because it's easy. And you know, you just don't do that. What's some of the best advice besides that you've ever been given in terms of, you know, how you approach stand-up comedy?
I have a piece. I remember it vividly because I had a mediocre show, and it's a bunch of military guys, young guys, and my brother came to my show and he said, "What happened? How come you had a mediocre show?" And I went, "Oh, well, look, they're younger. They're not very bright. They're like, I don't know. They're just like backwoods guys. I'm too sophisticated and intellectual for them." He goes, my brother goes, "No." I go, "What do you mean, no? It's clear. It's obvious." He goes, "It's never them." He goes, "You never have to have a bad show ever. You go on stage and you say what you have to say, and you be so compelling that there it's like you're an amusement park ride. They'd be crazy not to get on." You know?
That's such good advice.
Yeah, it's never them. And I was like, I fought with him for a little while, but then I tried it on, and I had, right after that, I had a week of what we usually call hell gigs, toilet gigs out in the, you know, one-nighters in the backwoods of Oregon, and I killed every night. That's the comedian's term for doing well. And in places I didn't normally do well. But I was not needing them the way I had needed them in the past.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't have an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that the human, like, here's a cool thing a friend said to me recently, a distinction. He said, the more agenda, the less connection.
Mm. Yeah.
The more connection, the less agenda, you know,
yeah,
which
well,
is something
the
less, I.
Yeah, the less agenda, the more in the moment you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people know on some level if you're trying to make it with them or get something or put your point across or, you know, if there's an angle you're working, you know.
Yeah.
And we're working angles all the time. We do it as human beings. We just do, you know. It's part of the experience. And I want you just being really vigilant, you know.
Yeah.
Where am I going with this? Can I actually be with the clerk at the convenience store rather than reducing him to a function? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I've been a lifelong fan of comedy, and my very first exposure to comedy was probably Bob Newhart and Bill Cosby.
I love him. Don't you love him?
Yeah, Bob Newhart. Yes. So funny.
And I'm laughing right now. I'm laughing right now because just thinking of him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Richard Pryor, I love Stephen Wright. You know, have there been people like that in your life who've been really big influences as well?
Yep. Richard Pryor, you mentioned him. I remember the first time I really gut laughed, and it was at a Richard Pryor movie in the late 70s, before I was a comedian, before I even thought of it. But I had no idea that you could be on the, like, just rolling, grabbing your belly, you know, like that kind of, like, busting out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was such like having your first orgasm. I mean, it was just like, oh my God, I didn't know this was available to me, you know?
Yeah, he was so smart. He was so smart. And that's one of the hallmarks, I think, of all of the comedians that I've loved, and probably same with you. They've just been so smart and so quick. Who amongst the new crowd do you like, if any? Mm. Have you seen any comedy lately?
I've seen a few new guys.
You have seen
like Brian Reagan.
Sorry. Have they been good?
Some of them have been great, some of these guys. And you know what I love is Wanda Sykes.
Okay.
It's so funny. Margaret Cho used to come out to my shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like the queen bee in San Francisco, you know, and it was such a fun, cool, hip place to be. And Margaret would come out and be real quiet because we'd all go out for food after. And I was the diva, you know. Now I'm like, oh, my God. Someone said, have you seen Margaret Cho? I'm like, yeah, why? Is she locally in town or something? They're like, no, she's really famous. I'm like, she is? Oh, my God, that's great. So I watched her, and I just love her, you know. She's,
Yeah.
She's great. Well, I have to mention Bill Hicks in there. Bill Hicks was a big influence, and along with Sam Kinison, he was a raging against the machine, you know, and he was so he was ranting, and at the same time he came from a place that had vision. Like, I could hear the John Lennon in him, you know. I could hear that he was passionate about a future that would be bright, given all the hypocrisy and the deceit and the, you know, corporate capitalistic system that runs the world, and that you know,
the whole thing. Yeah, do you think that Bill Hicks was maybe the prototype comedian for, you know, a line of comedians that you have joined?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Little young guys coming up, they all want to be Hicks, you know, and you just can't do it without the intention, which is to, you know, I mean, this guy had an intention to wake people up, really wake people up, you know, and he had a vision behind it. A lot of people who've done acid have seen like a oneness, the kingdom of heaven, if you will. And then, you know, the problem with drugs is that the door slams shut after. But you remember, oh, my God, I became one with all that is. And really, you know, if I can do that on LSD, then we must have the capacity somewhere.
Yeah.
If I have the receptors in my brain to experience that,
that's right,
it must be available. Mm. You know, so being an old, you know, I had that experience when I was very young. And but Bill, you know, I got to tell you a quick story about Bill. I'm sitting meditating one day, and I go to Bill and Sam. I said, you guys are both dead. I don't know if you're complete with your expression on this planet, but if you were incomplete, use me, because I'm aligned with you guys sensibility-wise, and I want to bump it up to the next level of love, you know, of really, like, let's get some solutions here to all this ranting, you know, and what's going to make a difference, because being right about how wrong everybody is never going to make a difference.
Mm.
You know, I was a peace activist, and it wasn't pretty. I was really pissed.
Yeah. Fighting against fighting isn't really pretty, is it?
Yeah, and mostly it's ineffective.
Yeah.
It's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people don't see it. We don't see when we're making someone wrong.
Mm.
Because it feels so good to be right, you know. It's like better than cocaine, you know.
Yeah.
And sorry to have all these drug references. I've been clean and sober for years. But, so anyway, where was I going with that? So get on an airplane and go to New York. And this woman I met on Craigslist. Do you have Craigslist over there?
No.
It's a okay, it's like a free ad on the internet, Craigslist.org. And I just put an ad to meet spiritual comedians in New York. Like, I just wanted to see who I'd meet, you know, because I'd gone to New York anyway. So, and this woman answered me, and she said, I'm not a comedian, but I see that you like Bill Hicks. He was my cousin. Do you want to meet for coffee? So I happened to be living right in her neighborhood, a couple blocks away. We got together for coffee, and not only was she his cousin, but they were the closest people in the world to each other. Her name is Joni. And so I'm on the airplane going back, and I went, oh, my God. What did I expect for Bill Hicks to show up like a shimmery ghost in my kitchen? You know, that was an answer to my prayer. That's pretty cool.
That's when, look, it's exactly what I was talking about before. When you do the inner work and you take the time to connect like you did, and then wait and see what happens. It's amazing when the penny drops, isn't it? And you have that.
I didn't even see it till after,
yeah. But that's part of, I think that's also part of the joke, you know, that you don't get it until later, and you get this little tapping on your shoulder, and it's him going, hey.
You know what it took? I was on the airplane watching a retrospective about Richard Pryor, and then it dawned on me, oh, my God, Bill did contact me.
Well, and
I
Richard.
Arguably. Yeah, and Richard, too, yeah. And then I'm sobbing, you know, on the airplane, like, oh, my God, my prayers were answered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what power do we have, Liz, if you think about it, like, you know, while we're busy like a ping pong ball letting life's circumstances push us around, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much easier could it all be if we, like you said, did the work,
yeah.
You know, the inner work?
Yeah. It would be a lot easier. But that's, you know, that's why we do what we do. And there are so many people on the planet now who are awakening or who have been on a path of being awakened for many, many years and of sharing their light with others. And so as each one of us switches ourselves on just that little bit more and we all get a little bit brighter, then naturally everything in the whole will fall into line with that, and everyone and everything within the field of oneness that we've been speaking about will experience a shift.
Other people are so contagious, aren't they?
They really are.
Their brightness. You know, I have a friend, listen to this. Can I go into a little story? This guy in Colorado Springs, which is a big Christian, right? Bastion of Christian, hotbed of Christian, apparently homosexuality. I don't know if he's gay, but he definitely had a gay experience with a male prostitute. This is remarkable because he has been preaching against it to a congregation of 14,000 for many years now, and he's, you know, become quite wealthy doing that, and now he's outed. His deception is exposed, and it's just, you know, they so got him that there's no way he could hide it or slime out of it or anything like that. So, and, you know, I was, like, experiencing so much glee about it got ruined when a friend of mine who actually knew him responded to it in a way that was so humane and so uplifting. She said, you know, Ted Haggard was the name. She said, Ted, I see you as a man of integrity. I want you to know that. Even though he has 5 kids and a wife who, you know, all this stuff, she said that to him. And if you can do that, it ruined my glee completely.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought, there's a great woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who can see that in another when he's expressed nothing but absolute hypocrisy.
Mm.
You know? There's a great woman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It is amazing when you see people around you who can just change your perspective so radically by their own abilities to be loving. You know, essentially it's about being loving. And and it's a good thing to have around.
Yeah, it's choosing the the greatest path. When and it's hard sometimes because when there's a duel or there's a conflict, it's like so much fun to join a team, right? Join the ones who are on one side or join the ones who are on the other. I love my gay boyfriends, and the last thing I'd want to do is have them, you know, is not appreciate the beauty of this with them.
Yeah.
Of a guy coming, you know, after they've been oppressed for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make a difference to make the guy, to humiliate him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'll tell you one beautiful thing about it is the guy, the prostitute that he had been with was so amazingly, big, I would almost say Christian about it. He says, I don't intend to, ruin his family. I just, you know, he just found out that this guy had been preaching against homosexuality and gay marriage for a long, long time. And he saw him on TV and went, no, it's my job. I have to come out about this.
Wow.
And he didn't ask for money. He didn't, you know, he wasn't for personal gain. He just said it. Anyway, I bring that all up just to say you're right. It's like, it's to choose who you're going to be in any given situation. That's so important.
Yeah. And to remember that we have the choice. We always actually do make a choice with our responses, whether we are consciously aware of that choice or not. We're still making one.
Yep. Because you know, the situation came to you so that you could learn about yourself, right? That's the idea why we're here. It's like Earth School, you know. So a junkie puts a rock through my car window and steals my laptop. This happened a few months ago. And I'm like, well, look. You know, look. Where are you, as they say in the Ramtha School, frequency specific.
I love that term. where are you being? Yeah, it is about bringing the responsibility wholly back onto your own shoulders, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not the easiest thing to do. Did you deal with that okay?
Yeah, and I'm writing an article about it right now because, you know, it's funny. I was reading this book by a guy named Steve Roberts called Cool Mind, Warm Heart, and which is a Buddha reference, I guess. And it's all about how everything in life is a gift.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything is a gift.
Everything is a blessing.
and I'm looking in my window with this broken glass and a big rock sitting there in the book, just like looking at me like Buddha would look at me. And I'm like, everything is a gift, you know. So I actually brought the rock home and put it out on my porch. I live out in the country, kind of, and I'm like sitting with the rock and wondering, you know, nothing's come to me quite yet, but I know I'm a thief. I'm a petty thief. I'm not a good thief. I'm a petty thief. But spoons and such, you know.
Yes.
Forks.
Yes.
Yeah, cutlery.
Hi, this is Colleen Nicholson, an animal communicator in Syracuse, New York. And when I'm listening to the radio, searching for thought-provoking topics to listen on, I check into Otherwhere from bbsradio.com with Liz Miller.
just been listening to Ian Friday's Tea Party instrumental dub of Lift Him Up, a brand new release by 280 West featuring Diamonds Temple on King Street Records, proud supporters of Otherwear. They're the longest running and most respected house label in the world, and you can find them on the web at kingstreetsounds.com. This is Otherwear, which is anything that activates, enhances, or evolves the inner technologies of the multidimensional human. We're coming up to the final portion of our dialogue with stand-up comedian Vanda Mikulowski, and I'm just about to ask her all about her just as talented brother.
Downloading. Otherwhere.
Now, I wanted to ask you about your brother, because you've mentioned him several times during the interview so far, and I know that the two of you, his name is Pavel. Pavel, yeah. I know that the two of you have had a very strong and close relationship since you were both children, and that you've journeyed together quite a lot in your spiritual awakening through your lives. And not only that, I mean, you're working, you know, in the comedy field and bringing in helping to usher in an emerging new consciousness. He is doing the exact same thing. He's much more involved with film, and I believe that he was working most recently as the marketing director for What the Bleep, or the marketing manager.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your relationship with Pavel and what your thoughts are on why the two of you seem to be working at these levels, and why you have this really close relationship and all that.
Okay. Pavel was also, for your listeners so they get a visual, he was the priest in the wedding, if you saw the movie What the Bleep.
Yeah.
He was the priest in the Polish wedding.
Right.
Small part in the movie. So, but Pavel and I came up in Massachusetts in a kind of wealthy family. My dad was a doctor, my mom was a nurse, and then it was sort of like the perfect American dream family. And then our older brother, a year older than Pavel, died when he was 15. He drowned, drug-related thing. And then my father died a few years later in a car accident. So we were kind of hit young with a couple of, you know, doozies, and we became very tight and very, you know, like we wanted to kind of journey together through this thing. We didn't actually think consciously that way. It just ended up everywhere he went, I went, or vice versa.
And how many years difference is there between the two of you?
He's 2 years older.
Right. Okay.
I'm prettier and more interesting, though. I don't say that to people because they think I look as old as he does, and I just said I've had a more difficult life, but I'm more interesting, though.
Oh, sorry. Okay, go on.
So anyway, so Pavel and I just have been voracious about finding out what the deal is. You know, we knew from an early age someone doesn't know what they're talking about.
Mm. That you know, there was a greater reality out there that you weren't being told about.
Yeah. And we kind of knew that it can't be what our school's saying, what our parents are saying, and what church is saying, and there has to be something. So we just would throw around ideas, and we found then in New York City, we were both in our early 20s living there, and we found some metaphysical tapes of Ramtha, who was one of the first channels who said full out, you've never done anything wrong, there's no duality in the universe, meaning there's no right and wrong. It's all just stuff happening. And your will and God's will are one. I'm like, wow. You know, I was never, like, sold on immediately on any idea, but I kind of like that. You've never made a mistake.
Mm.
How freeing.
Well, you know, it is so freeing. I grew up as a Catholic, and so from the moment I was born, I was a sinner.
But see, you and I have so much in common. This is, we're soldiers in the same army.
Yeah.
Because, no, but what better way to come up but with a rigid theology that cannot explain the splendor and the intelligence and the awesomeness of it all.
Mm.
As a kid, you're so, you know, you're so sensitive to that. Like, oh, my God, look at the sky.
Yeah.
You know? I had a 7-year-old kid say to me, why are we here on this earth? I'm like, I love that you asked that,
isn't
honey.
That
I love that.
But not just it is. Why are we here? It's why are we here on this earth? They know something. That there's not just this earth to be at, you know, that you could be in other places instead of just here.
Right.
It's a, yeah, actually, sorry to interrupt, but I really wanted to ask you before we conclude the interview about some of the stuff that you've gotten from kids. You know, you actually use lines from kids as part of your material in your show, and they are just so funny. But this, the new kids, especially the stuff that comes out of their mouths, have you been exposed to much of it?
You mean the kids, when you say the new kids coming along these days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, you know the new kids, the ones who are basically under 12 or 13?
Yeah, and I think they're all brilliant. I think they're all brilliant till we get a hold of them, you know, and we start to civilize them.
Yeah.
And they're naturally in a state of awe. And whenever, because I'm not a mom myself, I steal other people's children just briefly and don't want to have to feed them or anything. But I love them because they're just like any little bit you can give them that's expansive and that's possibility based. And that's like, you know, anything that you can give them that's like kooky and fun. I give it to him, you know, like when they come, I used to have this little kid who'd come to visit me at my house, and I gave him a banana to eat, and he said, where do I put the peel? And I said, oh, you throw it on the floor in my house. And he looked at me like, you're out of your mind, please, you know. I said, no, you throw it with a completely straight face, you know, just to, like, bust him up a little bit out of that rigid, you know, whatever. But anyway, yeah, kids. Kids are just precious, aren't they? And then it's sad when I see them beginning to get a little brainwashed. And, you know, like I told the girls in my neighborhood, it's a very kind of conservative kind of place around here where I live in the country. And I said, you guys look nice. And they said, we went to church. And I said, what did you learn? And they said, we learned about our Heavenly Father. And I said, did you learn about your Heavenly Mother? Is the feminine divine represented anywhere in your little theology? You know, like I'm poking at them, you know. And they're like, didn't your parents teach you anything? And then she actually told me, she said, there are women and girls in heaven, but they're the angels on the clouds next to Jesus. And I said, well, is it any fun being on a cloud next to Jesus for all of eternity? She says, well, you can't really move because you're not in a body. Well, actually, you can move a little bit like this. And she, like, does this awkward back and forth thing. I'm imagining myself for all of eternity, you know, like on a cloud next to Jesus. Going like, Jesus, move around front. I can't see you. Come on, come on, come on. You know, and the next day I went back there, and the four-year-old who was, she was playing with them, she let it slip. She goes, our mother told us we can't talk to you anymore.
And going back to your own development, your own spiritual path, and the relationship that you and your brother have shared over the many years since you were children, how have you both wound up doing such amazing work? He's now also working with Lynn McTaggart, who wrote The Field, I believe.
Yes, he is. He's in England, and he's in, I guess, Wimbledon, and he's just having a ball. He started his own company, so because he's kind of the guy who is really sharp at marketing to what they're calling culture. They don't call them New Agers anymore. It's broader than that. It's cultural creatives, and it's people like I don't know. A guy wrote a book about it. It's really a demographic group that would support a movie like What the Bleep or The Secret, you know, people who Hollywood didn't see coming. And it turns out there's a whole demographic group, as you and I were saying, an emerging new consciousness, you know, that is really happening. It doesn't make as much noise as the George Bush consciousness, but, you know, it's happening.
Oh, it's really, really happening.
Yeah. So Pavel's doing that, and he's gonna be like the guy to go to if you're ever marketing for that group. yeah. which is like your listeners and my listeners. And so I want him to come back to the States and work with me, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And have you thought about why the two of you might have wound up in the professions that you have? Do you think it's just part of your blueprint and what you were meant to be here for?
You know, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought it through all the way. We certainly are the ones who kind of poke at each other a little bit more than other people would ever poke at us. You know, like what I mean by poking is we're just like if something's off, it just doesn't sit well. If he's expressing in a way that's like scarcity based or something, I can't be with it, and I just have to get to the bottom of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I find all sorts of angles so that he can win.
Yeah.
You know, I'm committed to him winning. I'm like, you know, we're like, he's that way with me too.
Well,
and we're both very from some difficult genetics. I mean, difficult, just a bunch of drinkers and hard-working Polish people who are just difficult, dark, sad, you know. And so we're here to help each other over that hump of our thrown way of being is alcoholic and depressed.
Mm.
You know. It's not necessarily, it's a great place, like Catholicism, it's a great place to have come from, you know.
It's also a great place to have left.
Yes, exactly.
Or transcended, yeah. You could say, or, yeah, transcended, that's a good word.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot in Catholicism that I've held on to, you know, that's been really beautiful and wonderful, but, yeah, transcended that whole mindset, I think.
That's great to hear from you, by the way, and it tempers me because I'm, you know, such a rebellious brat, you know.
It's like chucking the baby out with the bathwater. But really, you can't because there is so much in it, underlying it, that is truth as far as I can determine anyway. What I do want to ask you, though, is with your own understandings and your own journey and what you talk about, what for you have been the biggest paradigm shifting experiences of your life? Have you had any multidimensional encounters or paranormal experiences that you might like to share with the audience?
I haven't had a lot of like seeing aliens or the kind of stuff that a lot of my friends see, and I always raise one eyebrow and go, how come I don't get those? But I've had, when I was younger in New York, let me tell you the recent one that I just love is I was watching the movie The Secret, right, which is a great film. You can watch it online at thesecret.tv. And it's an Australian film, and these guys just did a beautiful job of making it. It's old metaphysics, like it's not new stuff, but the way they put it together, it's so palatable and useful. So I said, I'm going to brainwash myself, and I'm going to watch this movie every day for a week because I just think it's that worthwhile. And on the fifth viewing, I get a call, and I'm focusing because I was in this point of frustration with my career, like, why isn't it moving along? I just want to be humming with the kind of vibing with the kind of people I want to vibe with, you know, high-caliber people who are not dogmatic, yet they're spiritual. And they're funny. I want to be with those people. So you're one of them. Look at that. And so I'm focusing on that, and I'm seeing, you know, using their techniques. And then I get a call when I watch during the fifth viewing of the movie from Los Angeles saying, will you come down and do this little thing at the Institute for Spiritual Entertainment? And I said, sure, I'd love to come to L.A. and do that. And I said, who will I be on the bill with? And she said, Drew Harriet, the director of The Secret. And I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, I'm watching it right now. That is so cool, you know.
And for the listeners who haven't seen The Secret, we should probably mention that the real premise behind what The Secret is that you can create your own reality with your intentions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about the law of attraction, and it's just juicy the way they roll it out there. So anyway, I did this thing, in L.A., and I did swell. And afterwards, I was talking about watching yourself. The more agenda, the less connection. When I'm in a situation like that, like, you kind of want to hang out with the important people, right? Mm-hmm. But yet, this little actress in the bathroom is taking my ear for a while, right? And then I'm, like, trying to, like, be with her 100%, but I really want to be out with the guys who can do something for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but so I'm watching all this, and I'm like, Vanda, less agenda, the more connection. It's like a mantra in my head, right? So you situate yourself as the genesis of your reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to situate yourself there, though, because no one else is going to do it. And so I'm being with the woman in the bathroom who's just all, like, loving what I did that night, la, 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 la. And I'm like, good, good, good. Okay, can I go now? Good. You know, but no, but I was committing myself to watching my brain and being with her.
Right.
100%.
Yeah.
You know, like the clerk at the store, right? Be with them. They're human beings, you know. And then as I left, I had like 6 friends from L.A. that were there. I said, hey, you guys, let's all go to this restaurant. And as I was saying that, Drew Harriet's business partner leans over and goes, before you go, I want to talk to you. And we connected, and he said, you know, let's write a film together for this film festival that I'm doing, the Elevate Festival, it's called. And you can find that online, elevatefestival.com, which is a rockin' film, music and film festival that's done in 48 hours. And it's the fastest growing film festival in the world. And I'm just, like, so delighted to be collaborating with these guys on a 11-minute comedy film about spirituality and the dangers of being too present. There's a syndrome called excessive presence disorder.
Yeah, if only. If only there was.
Right.
Well, that'll be a great film, and I can't wait.
Yeah, so that was like a whole... I'm sorry, what?
That'll be a great film, and I can't wait to see it.
Good. Yeah. So you asked me what metaphysical stuff. That was pretty pretty cool,
yeah.
Pretty transcendental. And I've had a lot of wacky little things like being able to know children's middle names,
mm.
even when they're a little exotic, you know, like Cassandra. You know, I was a barista at an espresso bar, and when I would get really busy, and then kids would come in, was when I'd be best at it.
Oh, my God.
Because my conscious mind would be occupied with making lattes. And then I was able to just access that natural talent we all have.
That is so cool. It's a very unique kind of talent, I must say. But we're coming up to the end of our time together, and I can't thank you enough for spending this time with us today.
Thank you.
What are your plans for the future, Vanda?
I'm at a big conference with Dan Millman. Do you know who Dan Millman is?
Yeah.
I'm with him at a conference on Saturday.
Oh, fantastic. Where is that going to be?
Yeah. It's in Linwood, Washington.
How can they find out about that if they'd like to attend?
TheGathering.cc.
Oh, good. Okay, that's really easy to remember.
And yes, a Broadway show.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Would it be a one-woman show, or would you have some friends with you?
I'm thinking a one-woman show with where I'm doing less, where I do some, I don't know, less, some sketch, maybe some sketch comedy. I don't know. I'm kind of formulating it right now with a girlfriend of mine who's a director, and just kind of throwing around ideas. And I'd like to be, just for fun, one of the first comedians who wins the Nobel Peace Prize.
That would be so great.
That's what my comedy does for the world, is cause peace.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool? I don't know how. I have no idea how that's going
to
happen.
Well, that's the thing. You don't really need to worry about that.
Yeah.
All you need to do is see the finished, you know, the end result and place your intentions on that. And I'm sure if anyone were to get one of those, you'd be pretty high up in the running for it. So
thank you.
You're welcome. Can I ask you, do you use any props on stage?
You know, no, I was prejudiced against them a long time ago by comedians who were purists. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to be such snobs, and we said, you know, those guys who bring those props on stage, they're just overcompensating for not being good monologists, you know, and so I was such a snob. Now I'm sure there are some great prop comedians, and they're probably pissed if they're listening to this, but really, it can sometimes take away from the purity of the form. Yeah. Now there are some really good jugglers and prop comedians and stuff who are talented stand-ups.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just love talking to people.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just love talking. And I'm not I'll open my mind. My director was just saying that. What about a suggestive prop? And I went, no. And then I went, well, you know what? Maybe I should open up to all ideas.
I think I have mentioned this to you privately, but it's been one of my deepest desires to one day do some stand-up myself. And I'm really hoping that I will convince myself that I'm smart enough and funny enough to do it, because I think that's probably been my biggest stumbling block. I'm definitely not smart enough for this. I'm definitely not quick enough or funny enough for this. But I definitely want to bring props on stage with me, because there are just so many fabulous sort of spiritual things you can buy that are pretty funny. You know, I get around town wearing pyramids on my head. All I'd have to do is walk on stage wearing the pyramid and say nothing. And, you know, that could be a start. So, you've never really felt that you've needed anything like that?
No, that's but really I think it might work for you.
It would,
and
I'm
I
sure.
think it,
yeah.
I think for many reasons it might work for you. And I really would love that kind of variety. When I throw a big show, I'm going to throw a big show one day with all these people I've met along the way, and have it be like, well, one of my dreams was a show, if I could find the comedians for it, I'd love to do it with people from all different religious bents or spiritual bents or whatever, beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we have in common is that we're all tolerant and allowing of others. You know,
mm-hmm.
so that we all
yeah.
create enough space for others to believe what they want to believe
yeah.
around us. We don't say you're going to hell unless you are born again or any of that, you know. And have a show called Can't We All Get Along? Isn't that
a great idea?
I want to find people, you know, like an Iraqi comic. I want to find people from all different persuasions.
That's
I want
fantastic.
It to be pertinent in the world. The only problem is like, I can't, you know. I asked a Christian girlfriend of mine, who are the Christian comedians and where are the ones who are really allowing of others? She goes, well, we really don't allow. We allow to a degree. And the I always want to say Muslim. Like, I don't know if there's, I don't know in that theology if
mm-hmm.
If there's space for other people to be what other people are being,
mm.
you know, I don't know in the Hebrew religion, if that would be, you know what I mean?
Oh God, there have
Judaism.
To be. There's so many funny Jewish people out there. I'm sure that there would have to be some pretty irreverent ones. And maybe after hearing this interview, some of them will get in contact with you, which would be great.
Yes, that would be so cool. At vanda@vanda.us.
Yeah, wonderful. And finally, for someone like myself and others out there who are thinking of getting up on stage one day and cracking a few jokes, have you got some advice for us?
Yes, and it's just keep a notebook with you and write down ideas as they come to you, because you're naturally funny and people really don't want you to be, you know, you think it's going to take the kind of smarts that is like super smart, but I'll tell you what, or the kind of quickness
mm-hmm.
that extra human, but really people respond to you being honest and you telling one on yourself and you being delightfully expressed and loopy and whatever you are, you know. People respond to you being the light that you are, and, you know, like Marianne Williamson or Nelson Mandela said, that's we deprive of each other of that. Sometimes we play small, right? And I am so your champion in that, Liz, to see you do stand-up one day. That would be, you're so naturally lovable. Like, I can totally see it happening.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think that's a step in the right direction. So thank you very, very much. I hope that one day I do it. And it would be great to do a show with you one day.
That's great. We'll have the funniest story to tell. Vanda was looking around the internet, and we just met and loved each other immediately. Right.
And there was one thing. That's right. Have you got any material that you haven't yet kind of done publicly that you could leave us with as we say goodbye to you today?
Boy, you mean stuff that I don't know if it works or not? Oh, my
yeah.
God.
Could you want to try something out on the Otherwear audience?
You know, I have about 60 pages of stuff that doesn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff that I think has some potential. But, yeah, I keep it in the file on my computer.
Okay.
Bits and skits of stuff that doesn't quite work. I'm working, let's see, on a piece now about We Are All One,
mm-hmm.
and about how, literally,
yeah.
We're all one. Like, we're actually inhaling and exhaling pieces of each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
on a microscopic level.
Right.
We're just, you know, through our breath, we release little pieces of ourselves, and we're inhaling pieces of each other, and it's kind of quite gross, actually, the whole thing. But just this whole thing of who is I, when we say I, like, what that means,
mm-hmm.
like, it's this idea that it's like this intelligence somewhere in the vicinity of your body, you know, that is local but somehow vast at the same time. You know, like, that, just the whole question is I. What's I? We say it every day. It's like we know what we're talking about. We don't.
Yeah. Oh, some people have more eyes than an optometrist.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how I write. It's not like jokey jokes yet,
mm-hmm.
but it will. I'll keep it kind of cogitating around. And if any of your listeners have anything they want to throw my way about their spiritual path and what they've found funny, you know, please feel free. I'm always open to listen to ideas.
Brilliant. Well, Vanda, much success and joy to you on your journey. And I really hope that we cross paths physically one day.
Yes, wouldn't that be great? I have a feeling we will.
I hope so. And
yeah.
I just wish you all the best. I really salute the work that you're doing and hope that you inspire many, many others to follow in your footsteps and take up the challenge to bring more light to this planet through humor. And remind
thank you
us
so
all
much.
Of our divinity through humor. And that's just such a blessing for the world. So thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you all for tuning in. We've come to the end of our time together for another week. The Otherwear Circle of Lights is reconvening here next week, right here at this time. So for those of you who've been missing the relaxation sessions, we'll have a nice long one next week. If you're in Melbourne, however, you can relieve the pressure of our crazy lives by coming to one of my relaxation classes. They're just starting up this week on Sunday and Wednesday evenings. I'd love to see you there. If you'd like to find out more, email me at otherwearhost@yahoo.com and I'll send you all the details. Have a wonderful week and many blessings to you all. We'll be right back.
Thank you.